This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Uncover a world of sensuality and pleasure with New Zealand's pioneering sex toy purveyors. Whether you seek excitement that leaves you wet, loud, or speechless, we have something for your every desire. Explore the world's best brands at your fingertips. Peachesandcream.co.nz, R18. Welcome to Finger Food, empowered by Peaches and Cream. I'm your maitre d', Stacey O, intimacy and relationship coach and culinary artist, and I'm bringing sex to the dinner table. On the menu is a selection of heart-to-hearts with people who vulnerably share their stories, insights, and perspectives. This podcast is about sex and so much more. We explore connection, letting go of judgment, and accepting ourselves exactly as we are. Let's dine. In this episode, I chat to actor, comedian, and writer Chris Parker. Chris is renowned for his outstanding work in numerous brilliant movies, comedy shows, theatre performances, podcasts, reality TV, and game shows. However, for me, his most significant achievement lies in how he kept the spirits of the team of Five Mel alive during the COVID-19 lockdowns in New Zealand through his comedy reels. In this intimate conversation, Chris and I sit down over a seasonally appropriate cheese board. Chris opens up about his eye-opening journey into the fascinating world of the adult entertainment industry, which he explored with Eli Mathewson in his recent spin-off show, The Porn Revolution. Chris shares about his personal journey with coming out and the challenges he encountered while building connections with both men and women during the early stages. He recounts the story of how he decided to activate his sex life one New Year's Eve and how he has navigated an 8-year relationship with his now husband, complete with the magical details of their wedding day. It's great to have you here at the table. Let's get started. All right. You ready?
Yeah.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Welcome, Chris. It was such a bloody honor to have you here.
Thanks for having me here.
Oh, my God.
So good. I feel so at ease. Alarmingly at ease.
I'm so pleased to hear that because I've been a fucking nervous wreck for the last.
Why?
Because I am an overwhelmed person.
Right.
A lot of the time.
I think I am too. I'm just learning now to just, I don't know what it is. I'm just taking each moment now as it comes.
That's great.
That's all I keep saying. I keep being like, just do it now. Like, do whatever it is in front of me right now.
Yes.
And then I keep saying, my big one at the moment is like, time will just carry you through it.
Time will carry you.
You know, when you're just like before, you're like, how am I going to get through the next 6 months?
Yes.
And then you're just like January at the beach and you're like, I did it.
I
don't know how I did it, but just time just pulls you through.
We let go.
It's going to let go.
End at a time.
Exactly.
It is a good lesson, actually. So welcome to Finger Food.
Thanks for having me here.
So first things first, I've created, with the help of my darling friend Summer, this beautiful cheese board for you.
It's so good.
I messaged you and I said, what is your favorite food? What do you want out of anything you could possibly have in the whole wide world?
I was like, snacks. I'm a big snack guy.
Snacks.
Yeah, and it's beautifully presented, may I say, as well. Like, it's got, what I appreciate here is I feel like it's seasonally appropriate.
It's seasonally appropriate.
Do you know sometimes people, they take it, they take it into like a spring vibe, but we're definitely winter, and this is like a winter cheese board.
It really is.
You would find that at like a winery in Queenstown. People are like are letting their imagination wander. And I actually don't think we should describe it because I think some things are better left to the imagination.
I
agree.
What is your winter cheese? Like, what is your winter cheese board? You know?
I love that. Okay, so I'm just going to talk quickly about how you appeared into my life.
Okay.
Okay, so you don't. This is the first time we've met in person. But I first discovered you in my lockdown era, which probably...
Your specific lockdown
my
era.
Specific,
which wasn't... Was that also the national
that
lockdown
just,
era? Or
it was me just lockdown era.
It was actually 2015 and I was just locking down. I was in prison.
So my lockdown era, you appeared on my screen and honestly, you literally got me through.
Oh, bless.
Like,
I hear that a lot.
Yeah. It was a mental health crisis of the nation and you were our saviour.
It's just my reflex, I think. It's just to make my fight or flight or content. It's my no, but like, I just love being creative in times of stress or anxiety, which is so annoying to hear because some people just love to sit in their feelings and do nothing, and that's totally valid. So to hear someone's like, I actually love to be creative when the world's burning.
Oh my God.
It's a nightmare, but I do.
Well, yeah, I was one of the people that like was stifled of my creativity and was sitting in my bay window watching the next door neighbors slightly going crazy thinking they had guns, and then I would watch your
<It'd be> like,
clips and be like, oh, okay, reality check.
From my end, what was amazing about that experience was how we could individually be isolated in our own spaces and not be connected with each other in time and place with each other.
Yes.
You'd still be feeling the same things.
Totally.
And so I would create a video from my experience of being alone in my house and everyone would go, that's exactly how I feel. You know, I was like, isn't that funny that we all are going through this emotional journey and psychological journey together? Yeah, we're all doing it independently, yet it's a shared experience. What?
Yeah, and that was exactly as you say, it's like such a psychological experience and the way that you were able to portray that or articulate that so concisely.
You make it sound like it was fine art and I would say they were, you know, 90-second videos.
Yeah, honestly, it was fine art. It was fine art.
Chuck it in the loo.
Anyway, I'll stop tooting your trumpet, but I will say thank you for that because genuinely... It brought some lulls into a very dire time. And then, so Anna Dean, I received an email from her about a month into your creation of the porn revolution. And unfortunately, I didn't read the email until a month later because I don't check my finger food email. And then I checked it a month later and I missed my chance to be on it as the sex expert.
Which we... We're always trying to avoid the word sexpert because I hate that word so much.
I'm definitely not a sex expert as well. I'm like, I've just finished my training. But yeah, I was on it. And then I was too late to be on it, but she said, come to the party. It's this weekend. And I thought, I'll bloody be there.
Yeah, it was a real ride. I'm kind of glad it's all behind me now, but I'm so glad we did it. I'm sure we'll get into it. But
yes,
such a fascinating area to look into. And so... weirdly taboo. People get so on edge when we talked about it. And I don't know what it is about me, but I'm just like, I just felt like being like, grow up.
Yeah.
Can't we all just, it's obviously this really multifaceted issue that there are so many areas that we didn't even scratch the surface, but we just looked at our own experience of it. But people even then were like, why are you even acknowledging that it exists? I'm like, because it does exist. So therefore we should acknowledge it. But currently it's just sitting in the subconscious and no one's talking about it and no one's got any ability to deal with pornography. And I was so angry through all the, not the making of it, but the release of it all and just all the sensitivity around it. And it's obviously sensitive stuff, but it was more just people's approach of being like, I just don't think we should be bringing this up at all. And I'm like, well, so what, just leave it in the shadows for
totally.
What? For it to continue to go the way it's going? Because it's not just going to solve itself.
I find that to be true of all areas of sexuality. It's a taboo area.
Yeah, and it's everything.
And it's how
it's
do
all we
how
ever want
we,
to be doing.
Exactly. So for those that are listening that perhaps haven't watched The Porn Revolution, what is it?
So Eli Matheson and myself have done a podcast for years called The Male Gaze, and it is our pop culture queer culture podcast that's totally trivial. And we started it in like 2015 or something.
Yeah.
So Eli and I had this podcast, The Male Gaze, and we'd talk about whatever's going on in the news, but every three episodes or whatever, pornography would always inevitably come up because I guess we're just two gay men. We both look at pornography. We both acknowledge that it exists. And I felt like it was this really exciting conversation on our podcast because it's like when you meet someone who has the same cult interest as you and you're like, oh my gosh, you also know. And you could reference like the names of porn stars and just the idea of that shared experience being acknowledged, even though those experiences have been individual, bringing it right around to the pandemic again, was like powerful. Mm. And so we were like, let's do a exploration into pornography. And I think initially we were like, it would be amazing. This is just the gimmicky side of me that's like, let's try and create an ethical porn, whatever that is, and produce it. And within that, we'll go through the journey and it just looks at the fundamentals of how it is produced, like how it is created.
Yeah.
So kind of like, what's in our pies? And then you see someone make a pie and then through that process you learn like, oh, there's some weird stuff here or this is an interesting thing.
Yes.
So like, we'll do that with pornography. And then NZ On Air were like, we would never fund that ever in a million years.
Oh my God.
But by that point, we were really into the subject of pornography. So we were like, well, let's just look into it as a topic. And so it was our sort of journey into exploring and understanding what pornography is, which when we all know it. But once you lift the lid on that thing, you just realize how big it is. And you discover not just a blind spot, but like a blind universe of things you hadn't even realized or considered. And also how great it can be.
Yeah.
And how detrimental it can be.
Yeah.
But the where it all started from was that it is a wayfinder for specifically, I can speak for Eli and myself. So it was a wayfinder for us as gay men to navigate our sexuality.
Yeah.
Very early on. And when we're talking to the classifications office, who do probably the most work on this subject, it feels like, specifically around the youth area.
Yeah.
They're like, well, we berate young people for looking at pornography because it's bad for you, yet we will not have the conversation around sexuality in school. So they've got these unanswered questions.
Totally.
They don't know where to go. And they're not going, I mean, they're not coming to Finger Food. Like, I appreciate, like, it's an amazing podcast.
Thank you so much.
But you're 14. You're not coming here. You want to know what it is. You want to see it firsthand.
Totally.
You don't want to hear people talk about it.
Yeah.
You don't want it to be served healthily to you in a balanced way. You just want to look right into the eye of the storm.
Yeah.
You so you go to pornography websites. Yeah, exactly. And so they want to know what sex is. And it's amazing even learning like how much how-to is like a search function on these porn search sites.
Interesting.
Because people,
like how to give a blowjob, how to give
a handjob, how to come, how to what it like. Everything.
Yeah.
People don't, yeah, there's so many unanswered questions for people.
That's so interesting.
And so you can't be angry at young people for looking at pornography if they don't have an outlet to discover this stuff. And what I thought was fascinating around pornography is we live such, in our minds, ethical lives that we're always faced with ethical choices. I'm going to have oat milk over dairy. I'm going to source this organically. You know,
yes.
I'm going to drive my e-vehicle and then we get horny and it all goes out the window.
I know.
Because desire makes you go crazy.
It really does.
And then suddenly all those choices are out the window. So what I think came out of the porn revolution was if you can understand pornography better because you have looked at it, what it is, and thought about it just for a little bit longer than just when you're horny, then you might be able to make better decisions for yourself because you know what you're looking for.
Yes.
So we're just trying to have these conversations in a way that was balanced but not judgmental.
Yeah, beautiful.
Because it can be good, but it's also terrible.
I know. It really can be good. And I also think, as you say, we're not taught about what sex is in school. I wasn't in my generation. It was like, here's a condom. This is a penis.
These are all the diseases you'll
this
get.
This is a vagina. These are the diseases you'll get. Like, stay away from
and
that.
Literally nothing on anal sex for me. I was like, what is gay? And so I'm like dealing with my sexuality at high school. Just like truly have no idea. Know that the bodies bump up against each other and you hear these noises and it looks painful. And you are trying to work out if that's ecstasy or pain in the guy that's taking it and just being like, what? Like all these unanswered questions. So you look at more and more pornography trying to like, I remember just being like, I need an example of someone who's enjoying anal sex because if I'm gay, I presume I'm going to be doing this, but what's the, where's the hook?
How does it work? work? Where's the pleasure element?
Yeah, and I was like, what's not? Because it just looks excruciating. But it's just because of a lack of education around it. And then a lack of good porn. Whatever good porn is.
Oh my God. I can't even imagine being queer and growing up and having such little education.
When I tell you a vacuum, like just a total vacuum. Like, I think I knew, and it's not like I grew up in a farm in the Alaskan wilderness. Like, I grew up in Central City Christchurch in the 90s and 2000s. Like, the gays were about, but it just, and it wasn't like, I lived a really privileged, gorgeous life, childhood. My parents so supportive, so kind. They didn't hold anything back from me, but it wasn't in the TVs, it wasn't in the radio, or if it was, it was like Peter Ellis case or whatever, these crims, or even though his name's been like released now, but it was just so much fear and that people just get so tense when they're talking about sexuality that I was clueless.
Yeah.
I was in Wellington at drama school. I was like 20. I was still in the closet. I was surrounded by gorgeous dancers and actors, and I was still so held back because there was fear and there was just total lack of knowledge.
So do you feel like porn at that stage helped you discover what sex actually could be? And as you say, you were 20 and you were still in the closet. Had you explored with anyone at that stage?
No.
No.
Totally sexually repressed, frozen over a frozen lake.
Oh my God. So how did the first experience come into play?
So I've had sexual experiences with women as well. And I mean, they were positive experiences, but they were just early sexual experiences. So I'm sure anyone would account to what those experiences are, which is like
terrific.
But they're like, I mean, it would be funny to sit down and talk with said women, but everyone was exploring, everyone was learning. And I don't think anyone felt uncomfortable, but there was a lot going on in my mind. And for me, sex was about making love, you know?
Oh, it's so beautiful.
Being tender. And the narrative that you hear is like, guys can never find the G-spot. And like, just like, that's kind of pop, like, because you're just fed what you should know from media. So from TV, from movies, that's what sex is to you. So the first time you do it, you're just modeling it off what you see, which again, alarmingly brings in the porn conversation for a lot of people. What they see for the first time is like really aggressive sex. And so that's not what I was doing, but it raises a big question. But I was definitely modeling my sex behavior on the movies.
Yes.
That's like making love on like via open fire. No, but you know, that kind of nonsense.
That's beautiful.
And thinking that's good sex, but also not really enjoying it and not getting it. So it wasn't just going crazy for it. It was always linked to relationships and reaching milestones with a special person. And then I'm just trying to think about my earliest, like, hold on, I haven't blocked this out. Who was the? Oh, yeah. So then I came out, and it's so interesting, that whole journey of coming out psychologically versus physically. Like, they're really separate things.
Yeah.
And I know I am a really emotional, romantic person. So much of it was like wanting a connection with a man. And so having those early connections with men, and they weren't even sexual, was exhilarating. And then a dog in the background, if you can hear it, is going crazy after this conversation. And then I think those early sexual experiences with men were, so much of it is like the virginity thing, isn't it? And I came out at 21. So I felt already, from my experience, and this is for anyone who's young who's listening, not the experience, but already so far behind. And I was like, oh, everyone's already doing it. They're already experts. And I have never been with a guy. So there's all this stuff that's already like piling up.
So much pressure.
And like, I came out and someone was like, you should try nzdating.com. for looking for guys. Like, Grindr was like a little glimmer in the, you know, it was just new, this new app.
Oh my God.
So it was like, truly, how do you find men? It was just scary. Like, it is so scary. And definitely, I think gay men, this idea of it is like, they're all having poppers and fucking in these clubs in leather. And I was just like, oh my God, am I going to go from this? I felt like a little virginal bride. I went to the sex dungeon and I was like, I'm so not ready for this.
Oh my God.
And it felt like you either go from 0 to 10, and I didn't know about how does 1, 2, 3 form? Like, where's that kind of happen?
How do you tippy-toe into the sea?
But I had a couple of pretty grim, not fun, and anonymous sex with men. I still worked through so much shame. And this came to me when I was writing my book, because I wrote this chapter about falling in love and meeting Michael, my husband now, and what led up to that. And I do think a lot of that weird sex and like the public dunnies or wherever you can get it all came from my own. And again, not to say that that is wrong. If that is like a kink or whatever, rock and roll. Yeah. But for me, it was linked to shame. I wasn't ready to put my face on my Grindr profile. I wasn't ready to meet these men that I was trying to have these sexual encounters with and give them who I was. So I was holding back in all these moments and that wasn't fair on them.
Yeah.
And that was a massive awakening literally last year when I was writing the book where I was like, oh my God, I wasn't coming to them ready and I was expecting them to guide me through this gently and I'm so dealing with my own shame around this, which didn't need to be there, but it all goes back to that lack of representation early.
Totally.
And so then I think it's this classic actor, comedian life. Like you just go on tour, you get busy and you're just doing shows. And I remember one New Year's being like, this is the year I activate my sex life. And it was my New Year's resolution. And everyone was like, it's genuinely too much information in this like circle. We're just thinking, lose 5 kgs or I want to read a book. And I was like, I want to activate my sex life. But it felt frozen over. And I was happy with it not having sex. Like almost felt, I don't know, it just wasn't like interested to me. And I wouldn't say I felt asexual because I felt like very sexual inside and I wanted to be with people. But I just had almost given up. Because my experience with hookup culture was so negative. Because as wonderful and supportive as the gay community is, they are also totally toxic. It's all about abs and pecs and biceps and being shredded and looking good in a Speedo and whatever a normative hot body is for some people. Yes. And I've got my own gorgeous body that does not fit that picture. And I'm happy with my body, but other men weren't. And that I've now learned is their baggage, not mine.
It is not yours.
Or like I was too femme for some guys and all this like internalized homophobic nonsense from them. And yeah, that's when I downloaded Tinder, I started dating. And yeah, the big thing for me is I think learning that it just has to be tied into relationships. Have I been talking for like 3 hours about...
Wow, this is fantastic. I'm so absorbed into the story. I'm like, tell me everything.
Well, the interesting thing is that's sort of where, well, it's where it begins my journey with sex.
Yeah.
But very quickly fell in love. And I've been with someone for 8 years. And so I wouldn't say I've had my slut era of getting around and hooking up and getting on the apps and having a new guy over whose name I don't know and all these things that is like so stereotypical in gay culture as is portrayed in the media. It's even Sex and the City or just the series where the gay men are like running around in crop tops and just like, I don't know his name, but whatever. And live your life, like, absolutely. But I just missed that window.
Yeah.
And just fell in love. And
it's not your journey right now.
No, right now.
But as a divorcee.
Yeah, exactly. Do you know what? You never hear about divorce until you get married. And then as soon as you get married, everyone's like...
No one tells you. And it's then like, you're married. And then they're like, by the way.
By the way. Yes. It's like all you get, all everyone's like, you've got to stay here. You've got to stay here. You've got to stay. And then you book a place. And then you look at the Google reviews. And you're like, it all has 2 stars. What's going on? No one told me this.
Okay, so I want to know how you met the
my husband, Michael. We met on Tinder.
Okay. And?
Well, it was part of my Activate Your Sex Life campaign, 2017 or whatever, 16, 2015. And he had just like great photos on Tinder. Really important.
The quality of the photo.
Like they were artistic.
Artistic,
yeah.
Yeah. Film quality.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like before film was like a thing. He was doing like shoots, like they were on self-timers. He was like, he thought about it all. There were backdrops. It was incredible. Immediately curious. And then I'm hopeless at messaging.
Yes.
And I can't do it. Even now I can't do it. He's like in Prague at the moment. And I'm like, I have to send like a voice memo. I just can't type, even though I write for a living. So it just is like, how are you? I'm good. Awesome. It's that kind of texting back and forth that I'm like, we don't have time for this. Just go out and live your life and don't worry about me. So we met on Tinder. We had a couple of dates, hooked up on the first date. And then we had a second date where it was like, no sex. Let's just meet each other properly. Okay. And then just slowly started seeing each other. And what does that relationship feel like? And it's felt like, oh, we're here. Okay. Are you happy being here? Yeah, I'm happy being here. Okay, great. Let's just stay here for a while and then check in later on. And then, oh, shit, we've reached this milestone. Okay, are you happy here? Yeah, I'm really happy here. Okay, great. Well, let's continue doing this. So that's been dating for 3 months, dating for 6 months, a year, moving in together. The pressures of work and still being together, getting older and still being together. And now it's like being married and buying a house together and so that kind of stuff. And we're still always surprised that we've reached them. Not that we don't have faith in our relationship, but it's just like it feels easy.
Yeah. That's beautiful. I love that. I love the way that you look at that. It's like, okay, let's just regroup every so often and be like, are you still happy here?
Well, you change in front of each other's eyes, don't you?
You're constantly evolving.
And there's been pressures and strains, and but it does bring me more joy than anything in my life, that relationship. Like, because I find it so comforting and I find it's like we're so independent, but we are together. So that is like a big part of our relationship. And that's why we had this huge wedding, and the wedding was like a big event for us. We were really clear on what we were doing, and it was quite the ritual, but we needed it for our relationship because not like it was in a bad place. It was in a great, it was like the best place it's ever been. And we wanted to mark that for us and do something where we started bringing out families together. And it's so nice just to hear what you are to each other from other people as well, what you are to them. And you can examine the relationship or the marriage. And we are two fiercely independent people who want each other to not have to sacrifice a single thing in our own personal life, yet love being together.
Yes to that. Fuck yes to that. Your wedding also was like the most beautiful thing we've ever seen. I read the Vogue article prior to you coming here. I just thought, wow, like your outfits.
Yeah, it was just like, weddings are just amazing because they're a collaboration. They're a creative collaboration. They're an event. Yeah. And a lot of people put them on and they've never made an event before.
Yeah.
But I do so many shows and Michael does lots of designing for theatre and stuff. So like
this is our area.
Yeah, basically. Basically. But then we got really into the what of the event. Not just, it wasn't about the aesthetic. But the aesthetic was amazing. Mm-hmm. But like everything had a real reason behind it. It was like, we don't want to get married in a church. We don't want to get married outside. So let's get married in this cinema. We want people seated down. We want people eating the whole time. So the whole thing was centered around a dinner. People were like, had food in front of them from the beginning of the event.
Oh my God, yes.
And then I've emceed like 6 weddings and I'm always like, the structure of the wedding is so wrong. Because like dramaturgically, well, the catharsis of the sort of story would be the vows that happen so early in the night, and then it's just like fizzles out over this like endless reception. So we were like, we moved the vows to later in the evening. So did all our speeches up top, dinner, and then we got married. And so it felt like we were really bringing everyone on board and like working towards it.
That.
And we wept for like 4 hours. Like we just sobbed and sobbed and sobbed. It was like so intensely emotionally. And it was like very exhausting, but like it was clearly the process we wanted to go through.
Yes.
Yeah.
You needed to shed some layers. You're being reborn essentially.
Yeah. Cracked open. Yeah.
Oh,
it was so good.
That's inspiring. I like hearing non-generic wedding stories because sometimes they can just be so beige.
Well, they're about like, this is the best I'm ever going to look. And I've seen this on Instagram and we're going to have this. It's always about like the things.
Yes.
And even like the photos are like this false narrative of like, how do you mean you had a wedding and then you were on the top of a mountain?
No.
With your bride who's like flying off in the wind like a veil.
Like you've gone off specifically for an Insta-worthy shoot.
Yeah, they want this photo shoot. But I'm like, well, that doesn't tell the story of the event.
Yeah,
the people
that
were there. Like, don't you want to celebrate that day rather than this weird fairy tale that's like, I mean, that's the whole thing about fairy tales. It's like, they're not real.
Yeah.
Why are we trying to create fairy tales inside of weddings? Like, they should feel really grounded. So, all our photos were just like, I mean, some of them are horrific. Of people, but they all look amazing.
Yes.
But it just captured the night. It was sweaty. It got those red eyes and like from the flash.
Oh.
Which I bring back the red eye, you know?
Yes. Bring back the red eye. Where's it gone? Okay. So what is the biggest challenge you've had to overcome in the realms of sex, love, and relating in your life?
Well, immediately I wanted to go down that first chapter of closet stuff. But actually, if you look about like my relationship with sex and stuff, the majority of it has been while now in a committed relationship.
Yeah.
So it's like the responsibility, even talking about these issues, it's like it always is harbored in the closet.
Yes.
I mean, really, the really interesting stuff has happened later on down the line. And I guess, again, it's reflected in media, movies. It's like once you are married, or once you're in that committed relationship, the jokes start coming. Like, we have sex like once a year,
Yeah.
And not wanting to fall into that narrative, which has only been written by lazy writers who are just making cliches and assumptions about what married life is like. So I guess the challenge is about keeping sex fun and interesting and keep wanting to have sex with each other.
Totally.
And not even saying like, keep wanting to, man, it makes it sound like a chore. Like, it's not a chore, but it's like, we've got to go to the thing and we've got to go to the supermarket and we've got to, you know, that thing of life happens. And there's all this admin that gets in the way of just being with each other. And also living in a flat with my sister is a total cock block.
Yes, I can imagine.
So we're almost like excited because we're going to get into this new chapter in our relationship yet again, where we just get to have a space to ourselves, which will be interesting in terms of like how we navigate that. But we're pretty good at articulating that to each other.
Amazing.
I am not good with like, I mean, you probably wouldn't be able to tell from this because I'm like, blah, 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 blah. But I think talking about something theoretically or like from the mind outside of it is easier for me. But then talking about sex when you're in it is a lot harder.
It's so hard.
So much harder. So long distance plays a big part in my relationship because I do a month in Melbourne or whatever.
Yes.
And yeah, we'll talk about, it's not like dirty talk, but often we'll review our sex life when we're in long distance.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's hot.
Yeah.
And I also just want to say, this is the main thing that people would come and see me for. People that have been in long distance relationships or even been together for 2 years and they're like, okay, how do we maintain the sex that we had in that honeymoon period? And actually, that's just not realistic.
No.
It's just not realistic. And I think there's all this, as you say, like societal conditioning and the media around what a healthy relationship is. And of course, it is scientifically proven that the most long-standing relationships are the ones that A, have really beautiful, trusting friendship, and B, prioritize their sex lives or prioritize that connection and that intimacy.
Well, it sounds so cold, but Michael and I always talk about how you basically can choose to be in love.
Mm.
Like, it's a choice every morning.
Totally.
Isn't it? And it seems so cold, but you're just like, no, I still choose to be in love with you today. And I do think
I love that.
Sex is very similar in a way that you can choose to be sexually attracted to your partner. In a way, I know there's a beyond that, but you can just give up.
You can, I mean, you can give up.
Yeah, you're right.
Guilty.
Yeah, right.
Giving up.
Exactly, yeah.
Giving up. And I do think you can just absolutely give up. And I also think there are so many incredible ways of igniting it again. And
yeah, weirdly for us, it's been this like encrypted chat over the phone.
Mm-mm.
And I just think it's like, do it however it works for you.
Totally.
There's too much pressure to be like, you must be able to sit in a chair opposite your partner, look at them in the eyes and be like, I want to be able to make you come. Like all this, you know, like I hate that
That's
pressure.
Stressful.
It's stressful. It's too earnest for us. It's all that kind It actually gives me the ick.
That's wrong.
You have to acknowledge that for yourself.
Yes.
And so for us, what works is being able to like, just like a chat.
I love that.
Over the phone, you can text and it's not like, I want to do this to you. It's more like, I feel like there's a lot of this has been happening and I think I'd be more into this. And like, that's sexy enough for us.
Yeah, hot.
Because you're like talking about what you want and the other person can understand it a bit more. And so, sex life has improved because we review it.
I love that. And you communicate and you talk and
Over text. Yeah. But I'm like, that's enough. That gives me a layer.
We keep some mystery.
Exactly.
Give it all away.
No.
I'm quite an over communicator. It's like a gift and a curse. But I realized sometimes it can be too much. Recently in my recent dating experience that, you know, date four.
Some people just need that lens, right? Or like that, just a couple of screens just about to be
just
behind.
Like, keep some things to yourself.
I found this even with when we were discussing for the porn revolution, like how do we talk about sex?
Yes.
And I think there's just this, again, like the sex pert thing, right? Of like, it's so sexually confident that the people that are giving the advice that like sometimes doesn't acknowledge those people that feel frigid or and it's like you can still be frigid and horny and still, and you can still be frigid and have great sex, but like it's nice to, like some people just love a little like lights off moment, and that's totally valid.
It's fucking valid,
but there's not, I feel like there's just this, what we found with the porn revolution is like this lack of like representation of just people talking about when sex is portrayed in media, it's always just like so confident versus like nervous and awkward and like I actually would prefer it if I just like left my t-shirt on, you know, or whatever. And I'm like, go off. If that makes you feel good, like t-shirt on, socks on, do it that way. Donald Duck it, like go for it.
Fucking A.
But you know, it's like, it's kind of that sort of, yeah, clumsy sex. Mm. But if it's good for you and that's the way that you can relax and enjoy it, then do it.
Do it.
Yeah.
Be yourself. What makes you happy? Do what makes you feel comfortable in your body.
I could honestly talk about this stuff forever.
Honestly, same.
But the thing is, I think with the porn revolution, I got a bit like, oh, people are so sick of me talking about it. But I was like, this, isn't it fascinating though? Like, sex is interesting to talk about, but porn's even interestinger because it's about how it's being portrayed. I don't know if it was Erica Lust. It was Erica Lust who said it, that like, in terms of conversations in art about sex and gender, porn has those conversations the loudest, yet we do not acknowledge it as a form of art. But I guess it is, like any, you know, that it's so detrimental that we don't bring it into the conversation around sex and gender because
totally.
In terms of how we say perceive women, value women, you have to look at porn to see the true reflection of society in terms of how do we respect women in a sexual way. And you look at the search engine hubs on those sites and you'd go, okay, not at all.
What were the main search engines?
Well, there's an alarmingly amount of step porn in...
Step porn?
Like step dad, step sibling, step...
Interesting.
And it's weird because I think someone could definitely do some research into it. And so the shame is that no one does. I do think it should be done because I wonder if it's like a clickbaity thing. Well, what's chasing what here? Is it the audience searching for it? Or is it the content creators, you know, search engine pirates who are like wanting to drive up revenue, looks, clicks, clickbait, so they create more like catchy headlines? So is it clickbait or is it actually like people listening to what the audience want and creating more content in that area? But there's a lot of it. But it's fascinating, isn't it?
It is truly fascinating. Also, what we're interested in sexually, like what is it that turns us on and what we're searching for and how common some things are and where that's come from, like where those fetishes come from.
And I get so fascinated now with, I think always with porn, it's like, where is the lie? And sometimes it's the fantasy, but I do think there's a lot of lies that get told. Women orgasming after what looks like really uncomfortable, terrible sex and seeming to enjoy it, or these totally unrealistic loads, or being able to stay hard for hours upon hours and stamina positions that feel like it's, these are the lies. But the lie started with like, postmen and pizza guys and milk ladies and whatever, and we started getting too smart for it that we were like, as soon as we feel the lie, like it doesn't work for us anymore. So we get smarter as porn viewers, and then it would be like that maybe that step thing or like roommate, or for gay stuff it's like the gym showers, and it's still shot to make it be a studio porn, but you can start seeing the lies in terms of the set or the bad acting. And so then that becomes an it because we get smarter for that. And so now we're in this world of OnlyFans and user-created content. I think this, for me, is like the most interesting part of that because the lies are still present because it's still creating a story or a fantasy for the viewer. It's still heightened because it's storytelling at its core. That lies still have to come in, but it's being portrayed as real because it's being shot off the phone of the user. It's not edited. It's not lit.
You can kind of have a sense that you're
not in a set. And I say all these things with brackets with my fingers because it's like
they've created a set.
The lighting, there's amazing lighting. There's, and that's for where I feel like I'm not like ringing the bell, but I do get like, well, that would be interesting if you were insecure about stamina or staying hard or what your body looked like. in your bedroom and you were watching this content from someone who didn't have a big studio behind them and they looked already 13 million times better than you in your brain. And you're not aware of the lies that have been created to create that moment because they're just creating great content where you're like, they're amazing at what they do. But I do think this idea of voyeurism and personalization and the fake connection is fascinating. Like,
yeah,
I do think that's kind of the tricks now.
Interesting.
But again, I'm like, it's fascinating.
It is fucking, I could literally talk about this forever and a bit, but we've only got, the builders are going to start banging their tools again.
The dogs bark through it.
We've actually almost passed our time, Chris, but we are now going to move on to a very important segment of the show.
What's in my box?
What's in my box?
What's in my box? What's in my box? What's in my box?
Hello.
For the people listening, I'm holding a massive box. It's actually been branded. Yes. That's really impressed me because I would never have gone to this length.
Well, you know, it's all about aesthetic here.
Yeah. I love that. Okay. For a famously non-visual art form.
Truly. Okay. So I'm going to invite you now to pop your hands in the box and see what you can feel.
Oh.
And share with me your sensory experience.
Okay.
And just one more thing before you answer. If you get it right, you get to keep it. If you get it wrong.
Oh my God. This is amazing.
We post it to your ex-boyfriend.
Yep. Okay, great. Okay, so what I'm holding currently is I don't own. So I can feel, it's that classic, like, sort of sex toy thing. It's right. It's like silicone or something. And there's definitely like a ring, which makes me feel like some sort of body part would go in there. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say it's some sort of like cage for your penis. Is that what it is?
That's exactly what it is, Chris. It's a cock cage.
Wow.
When I got to Peaches and Cream, I just thought this is such a beautiful gift that I'd like
to. It's incredible. Oh, I can't. Now I own that. I do appreciate that it's got like a
little
urination hole
it's a urination hole.
What is curious about this stuff for me is anything with sex, like some people really understand and get this. And I'm not like ever like, you're sick in the head if you like this stuff. I just like, I don't know.
Like, what is the
I totally like appreciate that for someone that's like, yes, 100% this. And that's the amazing thing about sex though, isn't it? It's like, this is a great example of it.
I also am like, how does it work? I obviously don't have a cock and I haven't used one before. So,
well, you definitely, it's going in here.
Do the balls go in the...
No, they do not.
What about in the black?
Oh, maybe they do.
There's various sizes that come with that.
I imagine it's all about things being...
Tight
and like held captive. And yeah, there's a lock, which the lock feels like it's doing more of the storytelling than it is the like logistics of keeping it locked up.
Yes.
But you'd hate to lose the key.
Well, there's 7 keys in the pack, so...
And that's clearly...
I'll tell you what, you won it, so you get to take it home and give it a go.
Yeah, I will. Absolutely. And if not, a great chew toy for a dog.
Exactly.
Isn't it funny, though, like, because someone's definitely lost the key. You could just easily, I'm sure someone's had this on at the sauna or whatever, not the one that I'm holding, but, and then just bought it with the keys, lost all the keys.
A&E's definitely seen a cock cage before.
A&E has seen absolutely... everything.
They've seen it all. They've seen it bloody all.
And the amount of people who are slipping over and landing on these foreign objects.
I know. I'm just like, how?
It's like, a shame.
I just feel like my asshole is, the sphincter is so tight, so I just can't even like, I can't imagine it.
It's an amazing part of the body. Men, it's what baffles me is like guys that don't know their assholes.
Yeah, I honestly want to get to know mine so much better than I currently know it. It's my...
Activate
my sex. Mine's activate my asshole. Like, that is my goal. 2023.
You can share that at New Year's as well.
Yes. Okay, so I've got one final question for you before I love you and leave you. If you could go back in time and offer a single piece of advice to your younger self, what would it be?
Oh,
it's a big one.
It's such a big one. God, I find these questions so hard because in my experience where nothing traumatic has happened, all those, I guess it would be this then, all the weird and not amazing experiences or the kind of like bad sex is all on the journey towards having good sex. But you're not going to have great sex immediately.
Yes.
So just take the pressure off having to be like a sex king immediately.
Yes.
And like you will get there if you want to get there with it, but you've got to have your own relationship with it. But I think all the bad sex is part of that journey. And I think we're just so quick to like wanting to immediately be experts at everything or understand everything. But the mistakes, you have to have the mistakes in order to learn what not to do. So the bad experience is a part of the journey.
Oh, amen.
Caveat.
Amen.
There's a caveat, obviously, which is like traumatic, horrible, bad experiences. Yes. But in terms of the ones that you are like, oh, that was awkward and I'm embarrassed or whatever, like it's all part of the journey.
Yeah. I love that. That's beautiful. Chris, it's time to get amongst the cheese board. Let's go.
Let's go.
Thanks for dining with Finger Food, empowered by Peaches and Cream. If you liked this conversation, you can tip your maitre d' by subscribing, following, downloading, leaving a review, and sharing this podcast with your friends. If you want to work with me one-on-one or listen to more of my podcasts, go to stacyogorman.com or follow us on Instagram at finger.food.podcast. Stay safe, stay sexy. See you soon.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.